From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for September 6, 2019. Just a reminder that one of our annual company seminars is happening this Tuesday at the Sharon Wilson Center in Brookfield. You still have time to register. Okay, here are a couple of blasts from the past. The Backstreet Boys are at the Forum this Wednesday, and The Who, really old rockers, are at Alpine Valley this Sunday. And the Brewers welcome the Cubs this weekend to Miller Park, also known as Wrigley North. Well, this is kind of embarrassing. After a six-hour-long standoff at a Utah home, police determined that the individual wasn't home. A Catholic school in Tennessee has banned Harry Potter books from the library because the pastor believes the curses and spells in the books are real and he'll conjure up evil spirits. Sounds like someone's been watching way too many Harry Potter movies. And finally, John Lennon said, "Instant karma's going to get you." Well, karma did get this clown in Washington. His car was stolen while he was robbing a business across the street. In the studio today, we have Kyle Tedding, Mark Amateus, Paige Radke, Joel Dreesang. And wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. We made a couple of nickels this week. Markets across the board were up. NASDAQ up 1.8%, climbing 140 points to close at 8103, up a stellar 22.1% with dividends up 23% year-to-date. Broader markets, the S&P Stock Composite 500 up 1.8% this week, climbing 52 points to close at 2979 with dividends up 20.4% year-to-date. Dow Jones Industrial Average tacked on 394 points this week, a 1.5% rise. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week 26,797, Dow up 16.7 year-to-date, including dividends. You know, Joel, let's start with you. Labor Department reported this morning that we created 130,000 jobs last month, a little bit off the pace of the last couple of months, off the pace of the last couple of years, but probably enough for the Fed to lower rates coming up pretty soon.
That's right, Bob. Even though it's showing that we're slowing in our hiring, we're still hiring. We're still adding jobs. We're still building, and it's a record number of months now that we've been adding jobs to the economy. And there were other good things in the report. It showed that year-to-year average wages went up above 3% for the 11th month in a row. That hasn't happened since before the recession, so that's good. And the unemployment indicators all are hovering around 50-year lows, and all of that adds up to things that, you know, we think should encourage consumer spending. And when we're talking about the economy, you know, that's what really drives our economy is consumer spending. So there were some reports this week that, you know, can cause some concerns about the economy, but you know, I kind of think as long as we see signs of consumer spending, we don't have to worry too much.
But you had that report the other week that showed that consumer sentiment plunged last month. Pretty volatile month to month on those reports. Should that continue, of course, that'll put a dent in consumer spending. But Joel, pretty impressive, I think. You look at wages year over year at 3% at a time when so much of our economy is driven by consumer spending. And I think it's almost mathematically the point that you look at business spending, the manufacturing has fallen off a cliff. It's not enough of our economy to really put us in recession unless the trade wars really intensify from here. You had some revisions in the Labor Department report this week?
Yeah, there were fewer jobs added into the economy the last 2 months. And last month when they reported, they said that there were fewer jobs added in the two previous months before that. So again, a lot of the, you know, and there was a report, I think it was last month, that they go back from time to time and revise their numbers just to try to make them all line up. And they said that, you know, in the last year we've had 500,000 jobs fewer than what they thought before, which, you know, what do we have, like 151,000 jobs in the 151 million jobs. So 500,000
I was impressed with the
lot.
Motor vehicle report. You know, you need a car to get to work, but you don't need a new car to get to work. And the fact that new car sales were higher than expected, you know, the trend is absolutely towards lower car sales in the United States. We peaked a while ago. But the fact that it was higher expected, at least short term, is encouraging to me.
They're still relatively high. And yeah, the fact that they went up and that they surprised the analysts who are supposed to know about that kind of thing, that's another sign that consumerism is still strong.
And Joel, a record number of light truck sales. You look at that graph, you and I looked at that the other day. And then, of course, that includes SUVs, which, you know, so many people going into the smaller SUVs, but still, light truck sales now, 73% of vehicle sales.
Right, yeah, and it was only 50% 6 years ago.
You know, low fuel prices certainly have helped that this year and in the past couple of years. I think one of the encouraging things about the vehicle report, though, and maybe it stands a bit in contrast to some of those consumer sentiment numbers that we saw last week, you know, vehicle sales are something that unless you're feeling pretty positive about your job, unless you're feeling pretty happy about the way things are going, you're probably not out there buying a new car. You're probably looking for a used car. You're probably looking, if you have to find something that, you know, can get the job done rather than buying the brand new features. And so maybe that's a sign that some of that issue that we saw last week and the week before with some of the sentiment survey numbers, it may be fleeting, kind of revert back to what we've seen for the better part of the last couple of years.
You know, Kyle, it's amazing to me that the market shot up like it did yesterday just on the story that the Americans are going to be talking to the Chinese next month. And it just underscores the volatility that we've been living through for several months now on the markets. I mean, there was nothing specific about the announcement. There was no announcement about any type of agreement. There was nothing that you could really chew on. It was just fine, they're going to agree to talk, and about the best spin you could put on that is, all right, fine, they're going to talk. But it you know, is nothing definitive at all, and you know, every other day the president's changing his mind on what he's looking for. So, you know, what's your take on that? That, you know, there's nothing definitive out there, and yet the market responded in a positive way.
Yeah, you know, Bob, I think this is the 14th round of negotiations now we're looking at in trade talks. And so, you know, really no resolution yet. And I think a big part of that has been that no one's really clear on what the end game is here, that we want to solve some of these problems, but we don't know exactly how we're going to get there. And so we just keep levying these tariffs on each other in the hopes that it gets to whatever the end game is, that, you know, maybe, just maybe, somebody has an idea. I think what's interesting, though, is this is maybe one of those where bad news can be good news, in that, you know, the absence of talks for so long maybe meant that there was some progress happening in the background, but we weren't hearing about it. Well, now we've got these talks coming, but for the most part, that hasn't been good news so far, and yet the markets responded, as you say, pretty favorably to news that they were going to get back together. There's nothing in that, though, that says that they're going to get anything done this time around, and I'd be skeptical that we are going to see any progress until we finally really get something down on paper that, you know, we're headed in the right direction. And so, you know, at least for now, I think that volatility that you talk about is going to stick around. The idea that, you know, trade talks are at the heart of a lot of that, I think, is certainly well-founded, in that, you know, you look at the uncertainty it's created for businesses, you look at the uncertainty it's created for consumers, and some of the increased costs for consumers the tariffs have raised. And I think that's a really good reason why markets will continue to be volatile.
You know, it's surprising that the president and the administration is either unable or unwilling to articulate what they're trying to accomplish, because, you know, I read an economist report the other day that spoke about tariffs, and he represented a business group, and he said that, you know, we can live with tariffs if we know what we're looking at. That we can deal with tariffs if we have the certainty of those tariffs in our business plans. What they can't deal with is the uncertainty of it flipping back and forth. And, you know, the problem that's been created now is, even if they resolve the trade conflicts, it's done considerable damage to the world economy. So just agreeing to shake hands and be friends again isn't going to unwind all the damage that's been created. So, you know, let's hope for some type of unified thought on the subject from the administration, because right now there's just too much uncertainty out there for anybody to get an idea of what end is up, how this is going to get resolved, how much is it going to cost. And let's hope that comes pretty soon.
And for U.S. corporations, we're talking about earnings growth next year that's supposed to be a little bit better than 10%. And I think the longer that uncertainty carries on and the more that businesses have to price in, you know, the increased costs that tariffs bring about, they can't necessarily pass all those costs along onto the end consumer. And so oftentimes that eats into earnings. And what's going to end up happening is the longer this carries on, the more we're going to have to maybe take a haircut to some of those earnings projections.
Paige, I got asked by a client of mine this morning, lives in the southern part of the country, about the possibility for negative yields here in the United States. You know, you got to wonder about that when you see the short end of the Treasury curve below 1% with the Fed intent to lower interest rates, you know, coming up soon with the very big chance that they're going to continue to lower rates. You know, you're not that far from zero at that point in time. What's your take on that and the bond market overall?
Well, I think for a long time, the prospect of negative rates was something that we never really could wrap our heads around, right? So in the United States, especially, it seemed like someplace that we were never going to go. And even beyond that, you know, looking what would be the long-term impacts of having negative rates. Now, we've seen that playing out in Europe for some time now. And so maybe the Federal Reserve is looking at that and saying, okay, maybe we could have negative rates if we needed to. My big concern with the Federal Reserve right now is when you're looking at lowering rates, you know, we already talked about the issues with trade and the uncertainty revolving around that. And I think that's really what's stalling business investment right now rather than the cost of borrowing. So every time the Federal Reserve lowers interest rates right now, we have to ask ourselves, is that actually going to have a substantial difference on the economy right now? Or is it just going to be sort of a measure to make people feel a little bit better? So that's something that I really want to watch out for, is sort of why they're lowering the interest rates and at what point in time are they going to sort of say, okay, let's level them out and see how things play out.
You know, if you take that a couple steps further, as you know, the two areas of the economy that respond the quickest to lower rates, one is housing, the other is manufacturing. Take that one at a time. You know, mortgage money was already this cheap 3 years ago. So the fact that we're going back to low levels for mortgages, we'd already been there. And housing is struggling with more of an affordability issue, as the average American family can't afford the average price house here in the country. And the other is manufacturing that typically responds pretty quick to lower interest rates, probably not this time around with the contraction in manufacturing, not just a slowdown, but it's shrinking. So they don't have the wherewithal to respond to rates. So. And then the third point, as you know, is, you know, rates are at 2, the overnight rate. It's not all that far to 0 from there. Beginning of the financial crisis, the overnight rate was at 5.25. So they had a long way to go to stimulate the economy. So my sense is we're not going to get the upside that we normally see with lower interest rates. But the Fed seems intent on lowering rates from there.
Yeah, I think if you look at the measures right now, especially, the general market is telling them that they need to lower rates. The overnight rate is one of the highest rates out there right now, and so that indicates that there is the need to lower. But the question remains, are they lowering it because the market says they should or because it's going to have a substantial difference on the economy?
Well, and it just may not produce the desired results that we've experienced in the past. Mm-hmm. Mark, let's bring you into the show. What's your take on events?
Well, Bob, I think the big thing for me is the dramatic decline in yields on U.S. Treasuries over the last month. You know, and I was reading a very interesting piece of research that showed that probably half of that decrease in yield is because of amplification by institutional hedging. What's happening is, for example, people paying their mortgages off early, so those to refinance because of the lowering of mortgage rates, and so the institutions owning those mortgage bonds, they've got to replace, you know, that income, and the quickest, easiest way to do it is go and buy longer-term U.S. Treasuries. So And then there are other hedging types of issues that different institutions are using where they have to buy U.S. Treasuries. So even though the decline in U.S. Treasuries over the last month has been very dramatic, probably only about half of that decline has really been market-driven. About the other half, maybe a quarter of a point, has been driven by these different things that institutions are using.
You know, I read that article, and the guy was just kind of speculating as to what kind of impact it had. And I was surprised that they didn't acknowledge in the article that, you know, the 800-pound gorilla in the room is $16 trillion of negative-yielding debt in Europe and Asia. Looking for a home, and 1.5 is a bigger number than minus zero. So I think that is, you know, bringing down the long end of the curve and at least partially responsible for the low debt there, but the low yields. But it is telling, you know, the yield curve is clearly suggesting that nobody's expecting anything other than modest to moderate growth moving forward, and inflation is kind of out for the count. You know, nobody even cares about that anymore.
You know, Bob, I think one of the interesting points is, you know, we so often try to distinguish between the technical drivers and the fundamental drivers, and certainly that $16 trillion in outstanding debt that's yielding, you know, negative rates, that's a very fundamental issue in the bond market. When some of the stuff, Mark, that you're talking about, those are very technical issues. And so I think right now, especially in fixed income, you have two things that are coming together to keep rates low. It suggests that, you know, at least for a while, it's going to be difficult to see interest rates move much higher than where they are right now. You're not going to get some kind of pop unless we should really see inflation take off, and that just isn't something that we've really seen any catalyst for. And so, you know, I think the way we position portfolios and the way we talk about positioning portfolios is moving out a little bit on the yield curve because we're not so concerned right now about rates moving higher. Again, because we have those two things working in our favor as bond investors, both the, you know, the technical aspects of the refinancing that you talk about and some of the trading that's going on in the fixed income market, but then also that $16 trillion in negative yielding debt that's going to continue to keep yields low here.
Another interesting thing, too, that's going on in the high-yield bond market is just the dispersion between the changes of interest rates from the highest-rated high-yielding debt and the lowest-rated. So if you're looking at double B bonds, their yields have actually fallen since May. So that implies that prices are going up, which means demand is higher for those double B-rated bonds. Whereas you look at the triple C, which is the lowest quality on that high yield, those rates are actually decreasing, which is saying that the demand is lowering for those. So that's something that I'm keeping my eye on as well.
And the high yield spread is fairly narrow right now. Mm-hmm. Which in English means you're not being compensated for the risk you're taking, which in English means don't take that risk. Mm-hmm. You know, while we're talking here, I was thinking back to 1998, the Asian financial crisis, and the yield curve inverted just before that. And a lot of people blamed the glut of savings by the Chinese for suppressing the 10-year yield. And, you know, now all these years, and we didn't have a recession right after that. And, you know, that was the first time I ever heard it's different this time relative to the inverted yield curve. So the yield curve is inverted again. And, you know, it is a little bit different this time. But I think people need to distinguish between the basis point spread between the short yields and the 10-year. So typically when the yield curve inverts and it's caused significant damage, there's at least a 50 basis point spread between the 2-year and the 10-year. And the last time I checked, when it inverted, it was 8 basis points, right? So the time to get nervous when the yield curve inverts is when it really inverts, not just a little bit of inversion, but by at least 0.5% or more.
And Bob, the Federal Reserve has done some research into that and looking at what kind of probabilities there are assigned to those gaps between the shorter term rates and the longer term rates, and even potentially what's the predicted depth of the recession, the predicted length of the recession, because as we know, you know, that inverted yield curve tends to precede recessions. And what they've found is that there's not much overall predictive value in the size outside of the absolute value, right? Is it a big difference or a little difference? But when you look at the difference between 50 basis points and 100 basis points, one's not all that more instructive than the other, but the difference between a couple and 50, as you say, is a very big deal.
Well, not only that, Kyle, but you also have to look at the time So if the yield curve inverts and it only lasts a day or two, that's not going to have as big of an impact as if it stays inverted for 2 weeks or longer.
Sure. Well, folks, the Brewers are slugging it out against the Cubs this weekend. Hope for a sweep. It's the only chance we got for a wild card, I think, towards the end of September into October. This is the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening to the show. We enjoy doing the program. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.